silenced from over the still suffering addict in and out of these rooms. Thank you, Joe. Fantastic. We have some meeting reminders. Please remember to listen to the similarities and not the differences. Please be mindful of others needing to share if the meeting is large and our audience will allow maximum share. We ask do our best to share the time. For those that might be visiting us for the first time, we don't use bells, whistles, or raised hands in this meeting. We'll rely on your integrity to be kind to each other. Please remember to mute your microphones when ensuring, however, and please be mindful it is the conscience of this group not to use video. If you've used it today on our maintenance program, you are welcome, but please listen to what has been said and talk to someone after the meeting. We're happy for attendees to post in the text box, however, please refrain from cross-sharing or chit-chatting. And please keep the messages positive, give numbers for recovery. And if you wouldn't do it, say it or anything else in the face-to-face meeting, please don't do it here. If you have any questions about our meetings or anything else to do with recovery in NA, you can send us an email to meetings@hypnotherapy.uk and we'll do our best to match your questions. And if you require meeting attendance verification, please let the chair, host, or trusted servant of the meeting know by giving them your name and email address for a private message in the chat box, and it will be taken care of. So thank you, guys. So, yeah, we are a speaker meeting. I believe we do have a speaker. I'm very grateful for that. But in the meantime, we're going to do some readings. Would someone like to tell us who is an addict?
Addict, my name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life been thinking we're centered on drugs in one form or another, getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of continuing progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
Would someone be kind enough to unmute and read what is the Narcotics Anonymous program, please?
Hi, everyone. I don't mind. Sorry, is there someone else?
Hi.
Natalie Addict, yeah?
Yep.
Hi, everyone. Thanks
Hi,
for
Natalie.
Thank you. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a non-profit fellowship of society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind, give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We do not have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges signed, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you, Natalie.
Would someone like to remind us why we're here?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jay. I'm an addict. Why
Hi,
are we
Jay.
Here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we're actually creating our own problems. We seem to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide, but addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there's no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you, Jay, and welcome.
Thank you.
And
Thanks,
would
Jude.
someone be kind enough to read how it works for us?
I'm Christine. I'm an addict.
Hi, Christine. Thank you.
Could you please not help me with the costs, please? How it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that the power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we're well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you're like us, you know that one is too many and a thousand never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to any, many of us viewed alcohol separately, but we cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank
Thank
you,
you, Christine.
Christine.
And thanks again to everyone who's read. Help us open the meeting. Take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors and a huge welcome to anyone that might be new to NA with us tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So, yeah, like I said at the beginning, we are a speaker meeting. We do have a speaker this evening, I'm pleased to say, and they're going to share their experiences and hope with us. For 40, 45 minutes or whatever they're comfortable, or up to 40, 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. That's their journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous. So I'm going to hand you over to Helen, who's going to introduce them. So, Helen, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everyone. I'm Helen. I'm an addict.
Hi, Helen.
Hello.
Hi, Helen. I'm always so nervous. this person is another very special person in my recovery. I see him pretty much on a daily basis, on a morning Zoom meeting. I've met him at a convention. I've done some service with this person. He's a really good team service person. I think we were a good team. He's always got a kind word. He's not one of the loudest, but when he does share his when he does share, he always had this strong, loud message to share. Just yeah, he's got a good recovery, and he's really inspiring in my in my journey. So I'm really, really so happy that this person has accepted to come and share with us. And thank you, Paul, for coming to share with us between a second and 45 minutes. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Elaine. Hi, everyone. I'm Paul. I am a grateful recovering addict.
Hi,
Hi,
Paul. Welcome to this. Thank
Paul.
you.
Welcome.
Thanks, Helen.
Hi, Paul.
I feel extremely nervous, and I was just trying to eat something before, and I could like hardly swallow. And I think I haven't I think this is the first time I've done an NA main chair. I mean, I was saying to someone earlier in the week, the thought of sharing for 40 minutes is abhorrent to me. And I just sometimes my voice can get quite weak and it feels like it's going to kind of give out on me. And I've done a few 10-minute shares since I started going to meetings again, but this is the first NA share I've done for probably, I don't know, 10 years, 9 or 10 years. I did a share in the other fellowship last November when I was celebrating 32 years clean. And I kind of stumbled through to like 15, 20 minutes. And it was kind of, I felt so self-conscious and awful. And I think, I think often my feelings are inappropriate to the situation. And, I was going, I'm coming from Bristol, by the way. I'm speaking from Bristol in the United Kingdom, the great city of Bristol. And and I, you know, I think the last like 16 years, I would say, my life have been very difficult. And that plays a part. It's been quite traumatizing. So not only were my feelings inappropriate to the situation generally, I think because of illness and trauma and loss and grief, my feelings are kind of sometimes more inappropriate to the situation. So yeah. And NA saved my life, frankly. What I have to remember is that we need each other, and this is safe to be here. And I think I've been thinking a lot about, I've done this share so many times in my head this week. And I want to kind of say something that's profoundly amazing and strikes emotional chords with everybody, which is a bit ridiculous. And also, I want to say, if there's anyone who's new to meetings or who's just trying to get clean or is still using, or anyone who feels like using, talk to someone, tell someone about it, and keep coming back, please. And if you think that I'm talking tosh, then someone else you listen to, you'll be able to relate with. And it's really important. I think at the end of my using, I started using when I was 14. Smoking dope and stuff. And at the end of my using, I was going to meetings. I think there's someone here who was one of the first people to 12-step me back in 1987 when I used to get my clean needles from her at the Drugs Project in Bristol. And a while after that, I stole a lot of money from my dad. And he said to me, "Yeah, I never want to see you again, or I'm going to phone the police, or you have to go into rehab." And I was kind of, I'd heard about meetings, people were starting to get clean. There were a couple of people like DJ and Tamar who had got clean, and I used to go to meetings in blackouts and like lie on the floor in meetings and disrupt meetings and yeah, it was horrific. It's kind of painful to think about, really. It says, we did many people great harm, but most of all we harmed ourselves. And I've been thinking a lot about my mother because I think this month is 3 years since my father's funeral, and next month is 3 years since my mother passed away. So they both passed away very close together 3 years ago. And I've been looking after them for a few years. And I've been thinking a lot about mom as well because she, I think, I went into rehab in 89, and I came off the methadone, and I the old paranoia kicked in, and I walked out after a couple of weeks, and uh, 24 hours later, I overdosed. My parents had gone away. They thought, finally, he's in rehab, we can go away. And I walked out and went into their apartment, and I overdosed. And my sister was in London. And I did all my using in Bristol. And my sister was in London, and for some reason, she kind of came back to Bristol. I mean, I see that as my higher power looking after me. Anyway, she found me and saved my life. And my parents were kind of talking to The people in rehab, they were furious and very upset. And it was suggested that they go to Families Anonymous. And so they did. And that's, it's when my parents stopped enabling my using that I hit rock bottom and I was, I was very ill, and it's hard to think about. And so in 1990, I say I went back into rehab, but I was dying very quickly. And my sister had gone to New York because she had to get away. Half of my family live in New York. And my sister and my aunt, I think it was Good Friday, they went to this church and had this all-night vigil for me because, And then a few days later, I was living in my office at the time because no one wanted to know me anymore. And so I had this office. How I had this business, I don't know. I kept getting arrested, and by this point, I had like eight criminal convictions and drug busts, and it was crazy. And I used to go out and get arrested, and I was banned from everywhere, and I just had this feeling that came over me that I was going to go back into rehab, and that I was going to be okay. And I've had that feeling a few times in recovery, and I see that as a gift from my higher power or higher power stuff, or anyway, you might know what I mean. And so 1990, I went back into rehab, and I was willing to go to any lengths to stay clean. The desire to use was lifted from me. And my recovery began. And I think the process of surrender, and I mean, they say, don't they? We say step one has to be done, kind of perfectly, really. And but the rest is a process, it's progress, not perfection. And so that's the thing about surrendering step one and the realization that, if I pick up, I cannot accurately predict if or when I'll be able to stop using. And that my life has become unmanageable. I cannot manage my own life. And I'm not just talking about 30 odd years ago, I'm talking about now also, because it's there's something about recovery. It's really important to try and remain a newcomer in my heart. So, yeah, so my voice feels a bit shaky at the moment. That thing about remaining a newcomer is, before we came to NA, we could not manage our own lives. We cannot live and enjoy life as other people do. We thought we'd find something different. We had to have something different, and we thought we'd find it in drugs. You know, that kind of, I can't just go out and have a drink. So I have to process stuff, and I can't do that on my own. So, you know, I need this fellowship. Anyway, for, you know, for quite a few years, my mum took the Families Anonymous meeting in Bath for several years, and she did so much 12-step work. It was unbelievable. And yeah. It's, you know, it's strange, these kind of camera off things, and being online in online meetings is it's completely rejuvenated my recovery. But right, you know, sitting here right now, I do kind of wish we were in the same room together, and like physically. And yeah. Yeah. So let me think a moment. Early recovery, I went to New York, and also I gotta say, in my first year or so, I did quite a lot of OA because I also have a food disorder. And I was in rehab for a couple of months in Weston, and then I was there for a couple more months, and then I went to London. Because if I had come back to Bristol, I would have used. So I went to London, and I stayed in London for a couple of years, almost. During my first 18 months, I had two relapses. Both to do with getting in into relationships. You know, the first was came back to Bristol, and went to see my ex and used, and that was a one-day relapse. And the second, I got into this other relationship in London, and that was another couple of days relapse. You know, and I lived, thank goodness. So yeah. And then I moved to New York when I was like 6 months back from the second relapse. Which is where I met Dennis, who's here today. And so I'm, and you know, I was so kind of smashed in early recovery, and in some ways, the last 3 years of my life, now I've also been quite crushed. And yeah. When I was 7 years clean, I was diagnosed with Hep C. And I think quite a lot of my recovery has been about illness in recovery, frankly. And it was difficult because I was trying to work and build a career and learn a work ethic, which I'd never had. And I kept feeling completely out of it and brain foggy all the time. And And so I think when I got clean, there was no PCR test for Hep C. It was just an antibody test. And I tested negative at the time, so I was told. I don't know how long I've been sharing.
You're good, my friend. Keep going.
Whoa. Okay, so yeah, 7 years clean, I was diagnosed with Hep C, and so that would have been like 1998. And I've been in New York for a few years. I've been really interested in photography, and I was kind of building a portfolio, and I've been doing other jobs. And when I was 3 years clean, I came back to the UK and moved to Southampton and studied for a couple of years, studied communications and photojournalism and journalism and stuff like that. And because I was really interested in that, in discovering my creativity and I went back to New York and I was going to stay there, but my visa fell through. And I was just wasn't feeling well either. So yeah, I was diagnosed with Hep C, and at the time, there wasn't really any treatment apart from interferon. And I remember seeing my hepatologist and her saying, I don't think that would be very good for you, because of your mental health, it wouldn't be great for you to do interferon and ribavirin. And your liver's okay. So, yeah, and throughout this time, I was going to meetings and doing service. I remember, I was doing a lot. I was enjoying going to meetings and and then I kind of had to move away because the in my career direction, and started studying counseling and stuff, which is great. And so I think 2001 or something, I was doing that. Yeah. I said to myself earlier when I was thinking about sharing, I'm not going to make this like a CV. But I think something that's been really bugging me recently and for a while is the way illness has kind of thwarted me in being as productive as I would have liked to have been. Yeah. So, I remember starting, we started an illness and recovery meeting in Bristol. Which was really important. And it was candlelit, and we used to have a 10-minute silence at the beginning, and people would come in to share. And then in 2008, I was just about. I was just starting a 6-year analytical training, and yeah, I was working with a patient, and just about to start my infant observations, and it was a group analytical training, so I was in this twice weekly analytical group, and I went along to the hospital one day, and I'd had this scan, and they told me I had cirrhosis of the liver, and I had to start the treatment, the interferon, like immediately, and yeah. And of course, that didn't work because of my genotype. And so then followed like 5 years or so, a bit more, of waiting for new Hep C treatments to go through. You know, phase one, two, and three trials, and while you know my liver disease was getting worse, and and by the time I throughout that time, I kind of. I couldn't go to meetings really because I wasn't well enough, and I was just, I'd stopped doing my training, and I was just going to the twice weekly group analysis and using that for support. Then I think it was 2015. The newest of the new Hep C treatments that works, because I'd done two new ones before that that didn't work, and the newest one worked. This was in 2015, I think. So I cleared Hep C eventually. But by that time, I was really quite unwell, and then I had a year or so of like starting to feel better, and starting to be able to think more clearly, because you know the brain fog had really done me. But I noticed, you know, I started to be able to think more clearly. And physically, I didn't feel loads better, but I could think more clearly. And I was sleeping better. And I put loads of weight on. And I mean, I was kind of overweight already, but so I was really overweight. And then in 2017, I had this other kind of illness, which was a bit awful. And then 2018, I think it was, yeah, mum was diagnosed with cancer. And I've been kind of, they've been getting old, and I've been doing their shopping and stuff for a while, and going over to Weston, which is where they lived, in Weston-super-Mare, after they moved there from Bristol. And and I just remember, well, it was like, because obviously, I love my parents, and well, for me, I love my parents. They were good parents. They weren't brilliant. I mean, obviously addiction doesn't happen in a vacuum. But they were good enough. And then some. And we were there for each other. So it was really important for me to be there for them at the end of their lives. So, I did. I mean, I remember the day when mum was diagnosed, and dad was getting, I thought my dad was going to die for about 5 years every winter when he got pneumonia. But somehow he just kept bouncing back and coming back. But I remember when mum was diagnosed, I made a commitment on that day to show up for her every single day, which is what I did. And I think that word commitment is really important in recovery. I remember I was so frightened of commitment. I remember when the penny dropped, I was doing a counseling training, and I remember being the idea of being committed to the other person. And seeing it through with my client. It kind of the penny dropped, and I wasn't frightened of it anymore, commitment. And yeah. And that's, I mean, that's the one of the amazing things about learning in this program is, when the penny drops, it's like brilliant. So yeah, and then I think2020 arrived, and that pandemic. I just remember the hysteria, the national, well, worldwide hysteria. And my doctor's saying to me, "Paul, you've got a shield, you've got to stay in for 3 months, you can't go out." And I couldn't go and see my parents, and yeah, for a while. And you know, a couple of years before that, my three close male friends, I'd realized that they'd all relapsed, and and I realized that both my parents were essentially dying at the same time, and I needed a male friend. To reach out to. And I remembered I'd seen this guy, an old friend of mine who I knew from the illness meeting in Bristol, and he told me about losing his parents. And so I reached out to him, and he said, "Why don't you come to this meeting?" Which was the Bristol Friday Living Clean online meeting. So I started going to that. I used to sit on the meeting on my iPad, with my mum at my mum's house. My dad was in hospital, and it was during lockdowns, and I wasn't allowed to see him. I couldn't see him, and he was, and I still carry, I'm still carrying a lot of guilt around that. I mean, it wasn't my fault, obviously. But I was talking a couple of weeks ago about that kind of the mix of love and guilt. Yeah. So yeah, Dad was in hospital, and Mum was at home and on a lot of morphine, and I used to sit on the balcony with this meeting on. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure I've been sharing for long enough. So, yeah, and I'm clean today, and I've been clean for a few 24 hours. I'm sure that I haven't said enough. I'm going to leave it there. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Paul.
Paul. Awesome. Loads of ID.
Thank you.
Well done, Paul. Well done.
You got a year on me. Clean time, by the way. Bristol. Yeah, man. Scene of the crime. Can't tell you how many years it took me to get out of that city. Kept dragging me back every time. But you share about your journey in recovery, the trials, the tribulations, the stuff, everything that goes on. I can identify with so much of that. I've had heart attacks in recovery. I've ended up with Meniere's disease in recovery, and had to kind of go through the process of reinventing myself more times than I care to think about. But none of it would have been possible without NA. And that's the message I heard from you tonight. That we can get through fucking anything that life has to throw at us, as long as we're doing our best to apply this, the principles of the steps, and the work this, those things in our lives to the best of our ability. Anything is possible. And we can get through absolutely anything together, and that's been my experience. I had a lot of gratitude in your share, and I'm really grateful for the fact that you've come along and shared your experience with the ladies tonight. I mean, you said enough. You said what you needed to say, and that's all any of us can do, So, really grateful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We're a big meeting. I'm not going to go on. I could, but I won't. So, what we do in our meeting here is we jump into a clean time countdown at this point, and we celebrate clean time in our meetings with clubs and virtual hosts. So I'm going to be asking if anyone is in the meeting today, this week just gone, is celebrating a milestone of recovery for multiples of years. Keep coming back. Anyone with us today this week celebrating 18 months? Or 1 year? Anyone with us today this week celebrating 9 months? Just unmute yourselves, guys, if it comes up. Anyone with us today this week celebrating 6 months? 90 days. Anyone with us in a room tonight, today, this week, celebrating 60 days? Or 30 days? Anyone in the first 29 days? That's tough. Most importantly, is anyone's first meeting 24 hours clean or less, coming back from a relapse, looking for a new way of life, just wants to surrender? Please keep coming back, guys, and congrats for everyone in the room tonight, having a day clean today, participating in our recovery by being in a meeting, making it possible for us to participate in ours. I'm always grateful for that. And there is stuff in the chat box about how you can get a key tag from us, so please check it out. We send them out in the post, all kinds of stuff. So thank you, guys. With that, I'm going to throw the floor open for Sharon. We are a big meeting. I said we don't use raised hands or bells or whistles. We're going to rely on your integrity to be kind and nice to each other, so don't jump on each other. But the floor's open, meeting's ours, guys. Anything you want to share back to Paul or anything that's affecting your recovery today? Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you, Steve. I'm Christine. I'm an addict.
Hello, oh, Christine.
Hi, Christine.
Thank you, Paul, so much. I identified with so many things. There were a lot of differences, but I'm going to concentrate on the similarities. And I got clean down in the West Country in 1990, and I only stayed clean for 13 years, but like you, I was diagnosed with Hep C, and I chose, I think someone's got a mic on, and my butterfly brain doesn't take much to distract me, and then I share for too long. I chose not to go on the interferon because pretty early in recovery, I was lucky I got my degree in my using by the skin of my teeth. So I came in with it, and I had a CV, and I was, part of my time was spent in the music business. So it was quite easy for me to explain all the gaps in my CV, because I could always say I was full-time in the music business, and I was never full-time. I never did enough work for that, but I could say that, and I did. And I got a job early on. I got the job through a friend who was one of the directors of this voluntary sector organisation, that's a not-for-profit for Americans that worked with drug users with HIV, and it was during, I had just been diagnosed with Hep C, but all the symptoms I was getting were, the thing was, my liver kept testing just mild, just mild inflammation, and it did that all the way through the 30 odd years I had to that virus. And because of the work I did, part of what I did was write a newsletter, and I knew very well that I'd done a lot of investigation into that treatment that was available back then, and I knew very well that it was a drug that had been around for a long time. They'd taken it out of the cancer drug cocktail because it was too toxic. It didn't work for HIV. It had some effect on some genotypes of Hep C. And so I was suspicious of it right from the start because they'd spent millions developing it, and they needed a way of selling the stuff. So that was my cynical anti-big corporation. I was cynical about it from the get-go, but in that job that I did, I got the job through a mate, but I stayed and they kept me on, and I kept getting promoted because I was good at what I did there. And I supported an awful lot of people through their course of treatment on that drug. And I knew how difficult it was. And I would have had to be on it for a year too. And I've always had clinical depression since I was a kid. So I just chose not to take it. And I could choose because the symptoms that I had were all the sort of virally type symptoms, because for 30 odd years, my body, I had a huge viral load. It wasn't hitting my liver because my immune system was fighting it. As a result, I was diagnosed with ME, which nobody knew anything about. Some medical professionals didn't and still don't believe in it. But believe me, I knew that it was likely Hep C wasn't going to kill me, but God, it tortured me. I ended up bedridden for a while, for about a year. And then, lo and behold, the new treatments came along. And crazy, I was clear of the virus in a week on those new treatments. And it pissed me off because I believe they would have been developed much sooner if it hadn't been trying to flog the interferon. But that's me. But anyway, also the family thing, I can't honestly say my parents were good parents. They did their best with what they had, but they were in, I had a shitty childhood. And yeah, that did not stop me from loving both of my parents. Unfortunately, my mom died many years ago. She had an accident, or she committed suicide. I'll never know. And my dad died not so long ago at the age of 95, but I ended up caring for him for years, and it wasn't easy because he hadn't been a good dad. Well, how I got round it was that there was two dads. There was good dad and bad dad, and good dad was fantastic. He was good looking, he was talented, he was very funny, he was highly intelligent and could be incredibly loving. And bad dad was the opposite of all of those things, but I loved him anyway, and I cared for him for as long as I could. And because my parents never banned me from the house. They never, my mum particularly, never gave up on me, And I know that they loved me. It just, they didn't know how to be loving. And they certainly didn't make decisions that were better for me. It was always what was better for them. But anyway, I'll shut up. I'm back now for 6 years, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. And the only reason I'm alive to say that is because I kept coming back. I never left this fellowship. I always knew if I was going to live, this was my only shot. So thank you very much for coming along, Paul. It was great to hear you. Thank you.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Christine.
Christine.
Christine. Christine.
Hi, Jay. I see you have your hand up. We don't use Ryan's hands, but please jump in and share. Just unmute yourself, Bill.
All right, thanks, mate. Yeah, I'm Jay. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi,
Great one.
guys. This is day 33 for me. So yeah, I feel good about that. I've been more or less railing nine lines of OxyContin for the last 7 years. Except for when the script runs out every month. I never found a replacement or someone I knew who had anything, or I don't know anyone around here. So it just became a habit like that. And I just became sick of it. Got to the stage where when people talk about using against their will, I really got it. It's like I was sick of it, but I couldn't get enough of it into me. And it wasn't like, people talk about low living and all the dark places and all that business. That wasn't happening to me because I was just going to the chemist, but the low living was in my fucking home. It's in such a bad way that social services will have to come to help with it. It's like 3 years really worth of. It looks like something on television, actually. Some of it is depression, and a dissociative disorder, which means I'm not always present. But the using on top just made me care less. And when I felt overwhelmed, just used more, just became a really horrible cycle. So at the moment, I'm the wreckage of the past. I completed 10 years in the other program, same program really, but fellowship. But for me, OxyContin was a completely different. I had a pain condition, that's why I got introduced to it. I wasn't looking for it. But it was my choice after 2 years of taking it correctly to just think, I wonder what happened if I crush this up. And I loved it. And it's like an abusive relationship that I had to end. And I'll end on this. I never said this before. It didn't sound like really serious consequences, but I had regular mini heart attacks. And I would just, it goes down your neck and along your arm. And I would just get used to it. That was just part of the process. Just pass it on. So don't do it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Jay. Glad you're here, man. Keep coming back.
Cheers, bro.
So, Jenny, yeah, please jump in. I just put a message. You don't need to raise your hand, but if you've got your hand up, please jump in and share with us.
Hi, my name's Jenny. I'm an addict. I'm not even recovering. I'm a nightmare. Thank you so much for your share, Paul. You probably settled me down. I've been able to sit on my sofa and listen to you with my two dogs rather than bouncing off the walls. Thank you to whoever's taken the meeting. None of this is pleasant. None of it's good. So I'm just going to spit it out like the bile that it is. My dog was murdered. I didn't know about Zoom until that lockdown came. I'm a type 1 diabetic, so I got all these letters off the dog. Basically, I was locked up in my house for 2 years. I could only go to the local shop and to walk my dog round a field. I had three dogs. 18th of March this year. Oh, and so I got on Zoom. I learned about the marathon meetings. I come to this meeting quite a lot, actually. But when I relapse and screw up, I stay well away from all of you out of respect for you all, because it's just not right. 18th of March, my dog died. One of my dogs, I've got two left now, but he was my boy, and I've never had a male dog before, and I've never had unconditional love the way I had him. So he's like the love of my life. I can die now, having had unconditional love. Well, obviously, I relapsed then. Since the 18th of March, I've just been going absolutely nuts on booze and weed. About 3 weeks ago now, I'd had a drink and I went on Amazon, because I live in the middle of nowhere. So, and because I've got had three big dogs, it was 12 kilograms of dog food a week, which is too heavy for somebody that's 8.5 stone on a wet day. Oh my God, I went onto Amazon and obviously pressed the wrong numbers on things because I was drunk, which ended up with 4 liters of vodka here and 4 bottles of Carver. And I tried really hard to cancel everything, and nobody let me cancel it. And then, what do you think an alcoholic's gonna do? And I did all of it. And I think it was over a week. I just phoned him work and lied and made stuff up. But then I was sick for 5 days. I couldn't keep water down. I couldn't keep anything down. And looking at it now, I actually think I might have tried to commit suicide by accident, because I've never done anything as stupid. Well, I have done loads of stupid things, probably as stupid as that. But not such a concerted effort in one go. Like, I'd make myself walk. The nearest shop is 3/4 of a mile away. So I'd walk there. I've never done this before. But basically, for 5 days, I just couldn't stop being sick. And I'm a type 1 diabetic. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be put in hospital. And I haven't been in hospital for 14 years. So, like, that's my little pride and joy that I managed to stay away from hospital for 14 years. Oh God, I'd got some weed, and that managed to stop the sickness. Never has that happened before, but it stopped the sickness, which was just amazing. And I knew I was in trouble, so I spoke to the Samaritans. I wasn't brave enough to come back to NA, because I knew that I still can't behave myself. But I've managed to get it down to what I thought was one night a week, just go wild with the spirits and fight me demons. And that's what happens, is I ended up fighting demons. Well, I finished work on Thursday. I went to Nantwich and I got a bottle of spirits. And I've come round on Friday night, last night, about 8:45 at night. I've not even noticed what's happened. I've gone to get in the shower this afternoon to sort myself out, like to clean up and go, you're not going to do that again. Oh, I've looked in the mirror and I've got a black eye, and I don't know where it's come from, but it's massive, and it's triggering me because basically, a Pakistani man that I used to go out with used to knock the shit out on me, and it was always my eyes. Like my left eye is buzzing now. It points in a different bloody direction. But that's the consequences of my addiction. And now I live with nobody. I've got my dogs, and I don't know what's happened. I don't know whether somebody's broken and beat me up. I don't think that's happened, but I am so triggered right now. And I'm like, Jenny, in the last 3 weeks, you're a bit too close to death. Something really bad is going to happen. And I know it's, I mean, how the hell can you get a black eye by yourself? And I can't understand what's happened. And the more I'm thinking about it, the more triggered I'm getting. And I just knew. I got out of the bath and just got some pajamas on, and I got straight on that marathon meeting. And then I've said exactly what I've said here. So I made some women cry on there, which I didn't mean to do. And I just know, I don't think things can get any worse. I really don't. But I've got two dogs, so that are still left, so I've got to stay alive for them. So I don't think I'm doing this on purpose, but it's really bad behavior, and I know where I need to be. And it's on this Zoom. And yeah, I've just got to stay here. But I think I started at 4:10 this afternoon, and it's now 7:10. So for 3 hours, it stopped me going up to the shop to do any more damage. I'm ashamed of myself. I absolutely hate myself, and I'm really sorry, everybody. But then I thought, you know what? People that have got recovery, they might need a reminder of just how fucking shit everything is. And I'm going to go now because I think I've got everything off my chest, but I'm going to stay on. I'm just not going to get off the sofa, and I'm just going to stay listening to other addicts who are doing a lot better than me. All right. And I'm really sorry that I'm crying as well. All right. I'm going to go now. Thank you. But I'm still listening. Bye.
Thank you, Jenny. Please
Thank
stay.
you,
Please stay,
Jenny.
Jenny.
Keep coming back, girl.
That's beautiful, Jenny.
Floor is free, guys. Please jump in and share.
My name's Sammy. I'm an addict. Thank you for the meeting.
Hi,
Thank you
Sammy.
for your
Welcome.
Sammy.
service. Hey, everyone. Thank you, Steve, and everyone else that's doing service. And Paul, thank you for your beautiful share. It was really soothing to listen to you, and to listen to your a bit more about you and your experience and your hope. I hear hope from you a lot, and I also really identify with lots of things that you talk about when we talk as well. And you know that you said one thing. You said about like trying to greet recovery like the in your heart, like the joy of a newcomer. That kind of, and that just really sat with me. I found that really a lovely. That's a lovely thing, you know. Like that's the gratitude of it. And I haven't really got anything maybe worthy to say apart from just really appreciating your message and your experience. And yeah, it was really nice to hear a bit more about you and about your life and your experiences. Thank you for the meeting, everyone.
Thank you, Sammy.
Thank you, Sammy.
Hi, my name is Dennis. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Dennis, welcome.
A member of the Brother Program. And Paul and I have known each other nigh on 30 years. And Paul, there was a lot of things you shared today that I was unaware of. And it was really good to hear you. And I just want to say that, are getting closer over the last few years. You've been a power example to me of the you have stayed sober no matter what the hell you've gone through. And it takes courage, and it takes the grace of God also. And I remember when your parents passed and how difficult it was for you, but you didn't pick up. And you helped my sobriety, and showed me, that whatever comes along, as long as we don't pick up, we can get through it. Thank you.
Thank you,
I'm
guys.
Michael, I'm an addict.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be clean. It's good to be in a meeting. Paul, thank you so much for your share, man. It was really good to hear you and to learn more about you and hear your experience and your life in recovery. And you and I have, I guess, got to know each other over the last couple of years. And you're someone whose counsel I value in my recovery. And yeah, Wouldn't know what to say, really. I came on to hear you and support you, and yeah, it was just nice to listen to you talk about your life and the things that you've been through, and really interesting to hear about your time in New York. It's that's something I've had the privilege to experience in recovery, is the opportunity to go to visit New York and to attend meetings there, and to meet people in the fellowship over there, and to learn a bit about the history of the fellowship in New York. Really fascinating stuff. But yeah, a great share. Really enjoyed hearing you, and I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Glad you're here, man. Floor is open, guys. We have time, so please jump in and share with us.
I'm Elena, I'm an addict.
Hi, Helen.
Hi,
Hi, Elaine.
I just wanted to raise my voice and say thank you so much, Paul, for going to share and for your share. You were saying, that you wish that it could have been a physical meeting with candlelit. Well, this has been a candlelit meeting for me, definitely. The candle is on, and it's been so appeasing to listen to you and so encouraging. Like I said, when you speak, your recovery word is so loud and strong. You stay so strong through everything you face. And I only heard you a few minutes here and there before, so I'm so very happy that you came to share with us tonight. I just wanted to share my gratitude, really. Thank you for being in my recovery, Paul.
Thanks for that.
Thanks, Helen.
Still some sharing time left, folks.
Is the meeting still on?
It is, but we'll just see
Okay.
if anybody else wants to come and share. I was having a quiet moment there, Dennis. You're welcome, brother.
Okay.
We've got another minute or so. If anybody else wants to jump in, guys, door is open.
My name's Tammy. I'm an addict.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for your share, Paul. You have a real deep sense of serenity and a sense of peace about you. I can hear that was conveyed in your share. It's like a knowing, and you have an awareness of yourself, which I think is something to be admired. And such a strong recovery, what you walk through in recovery clean, and what you, did someone turn their mic off, please? What you walk through in recovery clean, and what you talk about, and how you shared, it's testament to how much recovery you have and how much you've worked it. And it's something to be admired. There's something that, you know, I like what you said about a newcomer, thinking like a newcomer. And the longer I stay clean, I feel like that's more and more important to kind of to help deflate my ego, keep me in a sense of like having humility and to keep me humble, as in like, you know, oh yeah, I've got clean time. All right. You set the clinical recovery, you know, and what's more important is what I'm doing today. But it's just as important that I'm applying as myself as much today as I did in my first 30 days, as I did in my first 90 days. So yeah, I definitely got a lot that I will take from your share this evening. Thank you so much for coming to share. Thank you for everyone doing service, and I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thank you,
Thank you,
Jenny.
Tommy.
Does anybody else want to jump in?
I'll jump in. Hi, everybody. I'm Ellie. I'm an addict. I'm just
Hi, Ellie.
hi. I want to thank you, Paul. I really identified with the illness part in recovery. I also have had a lot of illness, ongoing, continuing even today. You walked through it, and I did too. And I do that too. I do it by just going to meetings and sharing where I'm at, and you know, trying to stay in the day. That's the most important for me. Absolutely, because when I get caught up in the physical pain, you know, it's easy to, I don't think about using so much as I think about not wanting to accept where I'm at. And I'm older now, so you know, I've got a lot of little things. Well, they're little things, but have escalated into big things. And so you know, I get caught up in and stuck in that space of, you know, physical pain or even emotional pain. I've gone through some emotional pain this as well this week. So, but I'm still here, and I'm grateful for anybody who comes to, you know, share our meetings. And thank you, Helene, for another great speaker. Thank you for your service, and thank you also, Jay and Steve. And that's all I've really got. Just want to thank you, Paul, and thanks for letting me share.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Ellie.
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 Well, maybe time for one quick share if anybody else wants to jump in and make use of the time. All right, I'm going to take that as a sign that we will have the opportunity to, and those that want to have. So I'm going to circle the wagons in the usual way. So we've come to the end of sharing time, but not quite the end of the meeting. Just a reminder that the room will be left open after the meeting for the meeting after the meeting. So if you haven't had a chance to share, shy, you just want to hang out with some fellow addicts afterwards, please jump on that opportunity and jump on the bit for the closing of the meeting. So I'm going to show this, I'm going to throw this in the chat box as well. We'll start that process off with tradition seven. We'll pass in the virtual pot. And keeping with tradition seven, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And if you're in the, UK and you'd like to do that, there's multiple ways you can do it. You can go to the bank, Highlands and Islands Groups of NA, sort code and account number are listed. Alternatively, or if you're outside the UK and you'd like to make a contribution, basically just go to the website higdla.org.uk. At the bottom of About Us and Guidelines and Information pages of our website, you'll find the Tradition 7 button. Hit that, follow the trail of breadcrumbs and make a contribution. Whilst you're there, you might have a little tarry around on the website. Some good stuff on the website, please check it out. The buttons will take you to the tiny URL, which is why anybody wouldn't want to hang around the website. Please check it out. Lots of links to other meetings, there's speaker MP3s, including me, recordings from this meeting over the years. Also, a lot of good stuff. Please check it out. All contributions made to those accounts are not used to support a group, used to help carry a message to the still suffering addict. Passed up and down the service structure as and when required. It does cost a little bit to do all these things, so all contributions are more than welcome. Do we have some announcements for the good of the group? Thank you, Ellie. Thanks, Ellie.
Ellie, I'm still an addict, and I just want to mention that we have an anniversary coming up. Thursday, November 19th, will be Hidna's 13th anniversary. Keep that date open. I'm not sure what we're going to do, but just be aware. The next Hidna Area Service meeting will be, committee meeting will be held on Thursday, October 31st at 2:05 p.m. UK time. It's after the 1 p.m. Hidna Thursday IP lunchtime meeting, and there's a link in the chat box. Also, Hidna has 11 meetings a week. The next Hidna meeting is tomorrow. The Sunday just for today, it meets from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. UK time, and there is a link. You can't get to a meeting, check out our speaker library page of members sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And other online meetings are available around the world. Please see our group website, hidna.org.uk, or virtual-na.org with 3,100 meetings. All set to your time zone. Actually, so does Hidna as well, has that capability. So wherever you're sitting, wherever your device is, if you come to our website, it will already convert the time zone for you. So that's it for me. Thanks for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Ellie.
Thanks, Ellie. I'm Christine. I'm an addict.
Hello.
Just to remind you, those of us, those of us who go to the Australian meetings, well, the Sydney meetings anyway, that they go, their time changes overnight, and therefore for us, what that means is for the next few weeks, their meetings will be 1 hour earlier. So instead of 12 noon, it will be 11 o'clock.
Brilliant. Thank you, Christine. Yeah, that time is upon us. Time changes. Yeah, thank you for
the next
reminder.
Month.
Yep, go ahead, Jay.
For the next month, that's going on, and it will be 1 hour and then 2 hours. So please be aware of that. It's already happened.
Awesome. Thank you, Jay. But I think, as like we've said, virtual-na and our website, hygna.org.uk, takes care of that automatically. So just keep an eye on the time. Thank you, guys. So, would someone be kind enough to help us now and do we do recover?
I can do that. I'm an addict.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have an anonymity statement in our meetings, which is tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Tradition 12 tells us that anonymity is one of the core principles of our program. But when attending our meetings, we will do our best to remember that gossip can be very damaging to our fellowship and individual members. What this basically means is who you see here, what you hear here when you leave here, please let it stay here. But please do carry the life-saving message away to yourselves and the next addicts you find that might benefit from it. So that just remains for me to thank everyone for being here. Thank you, Jay and Ellie, for your service. Huge thank you, Paul, for your share tonight. Took a lot away from that. Yeah, connections in Bristol. Be interesting to talk to you about that after the meeting. So, yeah, and we have a nice way of closing this meeting. You just have another moment's silence to remember the still suffering addict in and out of these rooms. And please spare a thought for the addict who's not yet had the opportunity to hear the message of hope and freedom from active addiction. And that once we get here, we never have to use again if we so choose on a daily basis. And for those that would care to unmute themselves, gather there in cyberspace. Join us in the wee version of the Serenity Prayer using the word God as you understand it. God.
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 The Quran.
Yes, the Serenity.
Accept the thing that cannot change. Or it changes the thing that can.
Wisdom.
Wisdom.
Wisdom. Wisdom. Wisdom. Wisdom. Wisdom.
Wisdom.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Cool, cool, cool.